sponsored commercial-free radio. This is Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston, 90.1 FM.
Welcome to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT Houston 90.1 FM. My co-host is Andrew Ferguson.
Hi there, folks. How y'all doing?
And in case I occasionally forget to mention him, I'm sure he'll remember to mention himself.
Yes,
it's nothing personal. I'm an old guy.
Especially since now it's official. I am officially your co-host.
Yes, that is why he's not my guest co-host. He is my co-host.
Yes.
So, a promotion.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. First of all, an update on voting. Super Tuesday is coming up on March 3rd. That's, a Tuesday because it is Super Tuesday. Early voting ends on the 28th. So from today through the 28th, polling places are open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. in Harris County. Outside counties, you have to either call your county clerk or go to the Secretary of State to get your early voting information. In Harris County, Diane Troutman has set the rule, according to Texas state law, that you can vote at any legal polling station. You do not have to find your precinct. That applies to both early voting and Election Day. And I, again, because of the funny stuff, I want to restate that you should not, I mean, you should have the proper ID. If you don't have a photo ID, you need to present a utility bill or a passport or, I mean, there are various things. You can go to harrisvotes.com and get the whole list. I'm not going to read them now. But here's the key. Do not let them turn you away without voting. Do not accept any reason, any excuse, any argument for making you leave without having cast a ballot. You can always request, I would suggest starting politely, you can always request a provisional ballot. Now, a provisional ballot, you have to verify your identity within 6 days. Where, I'm not sure, but 6 days is the time limit.
Okay.
So maybe you can go to a polling place and do it. I am not sure.
Right.
But you have 6 days after you cast a provisional ballot to bring the various kinds of required ID. Do not leave without casting a ballot. If you nicely request a provisional ballot and they say no, and I don't care who's there. I don't care if there's an off-duty cop with a gun. They have no right at all to police you or to stop you. Get a provisional ballot, cast your votes, and then if you have to, prove your ID. So the key here is don't be intimidated. In some precincts, there may be efforts to intimidate. Do not be intimidated. They cannot do anything to you. Okay? You can call the Democratic Party hotline. You can call the Republican Party hotline if that's appropriate. You can call the Harris County Clerk's office. There, you can talk to the precinct judge. They have contact information on what to do when there is a dispute at the polling station. Do not be intimidated.
You have the right to demand a provisional ballot if they won't give it to you when you request it.
And I'm going to say this. I know that it can be hard to stand up to intimidation. And, you know, some of us have moments that we're heroic and some of us have moments when we're not so heroic. All of us have those moments. And we try to choose them. But As far as I have heard, even with the various efforts at voter intimidation, having Republican poll watchers looking over your shoulder, which is illegal, by the way, et cetera, I have never heard of anyone being physically threatened. Mm. So it's really a matter of psychological intimidation. Yeah. Do not be intimidated. Okay, enough of that. I don't want to beat a dead horse. Andrew?
I just wanted to say, if you do feel like you're intimidated, there's no shame in, you know, trying to stand up for yourself and feeling like you don't do a good enough job, because standing up for yourself rarely goes how you think it's going to go. It rarely goes smoothly, you know. There's no shame in, you know, having stumbled over a word or not having had the right, you know, the cutting word to say, you know.
And also keep in mind, voter intimidation is crime.
Yeah, it's a crime.
It's a felony.
Yeah, and it's a serious problem.
It's a serious felony.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's that.
Yeah.
If you're feeling intimidated, understand, if you can record the conversation on your phone, phones are becoming amazing ways of acquiring justice, achieving justice. I mean, do what you can, do what you feel safe doing, but you have the right to vote, and they have no right to intimidate you.
Yes.
And I think that's enough. I think I've talked about that enough.
Yeah, fair.
Okay. Let's see. So I did a little checking, and I subscribe to the Houston Tribune. It's a nonprofit Texas newspaper that tries to be, in the actual sense of the words, fair and balanced. It's kind of like the word Trump. You feel dirty using it. The phrase fair and balanced has been so polluted by Fox News, but they are fair and balanced.
This newspaper, the Houston Tribune?
The Texas Tribune.
You called it the Houston Tribune.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
Well, the...
we can go back over the tapes
I'm
later.
Pushing 70. That's my excuse for everything.
Yeah.
The Texas Tribune, texastribune.org, and they are a 501c3. Mm-hmm. They are tax deductible to subscribe to, and I support them partly for that reason. And they do Texas reporting from a nonpartisan point of view. Mm. And they're very, very serious about that. Plus, anyway, I'm not going to give them an ad. but that's that. So this is where I got that from. The article is called, Here's How Many Texans Are Voting Early in the 2020 Primaries. And they're doing like a regular update. So rather than excerpt the article, I just kind of digested it. Mm. As of day 5, early voting among Democrats is generally up compared to presidential years since 2012. And while comparable early voting is down in several counties, in some counties it's up slightly, in others it's up as much as 40 to 100%.
Huh.
In the early voting first 5 days in the Democratic primary.
Okay.
Now, of course, they don't have any counts, but, you know, they can count how many.
Yeah.
The ballot count itself doesn't happen until Election Day, or at least not officially.
Right.
Now, here was an interesting bit, also from the Texas Tribune. Impeachment left Texas voters sour on the president and both parties in Congress. By the way, open forum, 713-526-5738. I don't want anyone to feel left out. 713-526-5738. Texas voters give low marks to the leaders involved in the impeachment proceedings, showing their partisan stripes in their assessments. So, let's see. Only 39% of Texas voters liked the way President Donald Trump, and that's how I avoid saying President and Trump consecutively, they liked the way it was handled impeachment, the way Trump handled impeachment. 38% approved of congressional Republicans, only 37% approved of Democrats. But when you divide it along party lines, Republicans, 75% approved of Trump's handling of impeachment, whereas 12% were neutral, and only 11% of Republicans disapproved of the way Trump handled impeachment. This is an interesting detail. The most trusted branch of the federal government found by the poll was the judiciary, the Supreme Court and the judiciary, chosen by 30% of the voters, which is, you know, it's like the paper sort of presents this as good news. I actually think that's horrible news, that only 30% of voters consider the judiciary to be their most trusted branch. That should be like 90%. The president and the executive branch were the most trusted by 27% of voters, Congress trusted by 12. For Democrats, the courts were the most trusted, the executive branch the least. However, and this is interesting, Republicans had the executive branch, Trump's branch, mm-hmm. as the most trusted branch of government, then followed by the courts.
Hmm.
Now, this is a fundamental philosophical, ideological divide.
Sure.
That, you know, on the one hand, Democrats appear in their heart of hearts to be hoping for justice in the courts,
mm-hmm.
whereas Republicans seem to be perfectly happy with authoritarianism in the executive.
Hmm.
That's fascinating and troubling.
Well, I wonder, I don't know if they did this study during the Obama administration, but I'd wonder what the results were if they did such a study during that administration, because I get the feeling that across the board, the results may be different. And I have a feeling that it may have to do with whether our guy is in power or their guy is in power.
Well, of course, there is partisanship. I'm speculating here. This
sure.
is well beyond the article, and it's well beyond what I would consider a reasonable degree of certainty on my part. This is speculation.
Right.
I suspect that the last several years would show a significant decline in trust in both the executive and the judicial branches.
Mm, probably, yeah.
But, you know, time will tell.
Yeah, I would agree with that assessment based off of the life experience I've had and the life experience you've had and all that sort of thing. But
Now, going on to the next story, Bernie Sanders had an interview on 60 Minutes that news analyst Chris Cillizza at CNN termed disastrous. He gave a disastrous answer, according to Chris Cillizza. And I have some bits here. Bernie Sanders, clear front runner, he says, of the Democratic presidential nomination, asked over a weekend how much his various plans would cost if implemented. He didn't know. Now, that's Chris Cillizza's words. You can go to my website. I've posted the article with the links. It's item number 6, I believe. And you can actually click on the exchange between Sanders and Anderson Cooper on 60 Minutes. Sanders, according to Cillizza, not only isn't sure how much his proposals would cost, but also isn't able to say how much he would pay for these programs. And that seems to Cillizza as a weak spot. Now, in contrast, Elizabeth Warren has a plan for everything, and she has been pinned down with
mm-hmm.
numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you may not agree with her numbers,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sure the numbers will have to be massaged in reality in Congress,
mm-hmm.
but she has come up with a plan that actually says, I'm going to get this money from here and that money from there, and this is how it's going to work, and here's how we're going to pay. A weekend memo from what they're calling the Democratic centrist group Third Way, basically a group of blue dog Democrats,
mm-hmm.
Warned the party of the perils of nominating Sanders. Authors Jonathan Cowan and Matt Bennett write, quote, experts estimate that Sanders' major proposals would cost a staggering $60 trillion, would double the size of government, which given how much it's been gutted may not be a bad thing. And while his tax plan falls short, that is to say, Sanders' tax plan falls short by $27 trillion in terms of paying. So basically about half of it, they're claiming, would not be funded. There's a reason that when pressed on cost plans, Sanders simply refuses to answer, saying he actually has no idea. And Cillizza's using this as a quote, no one does. The $60 trillion number comes from The Atlantic's Ron Brownstein, who broke down the costs of proposals like Medicare for All, the Green New Deal, free tuition at public colleges, and arrived at that stunning price tag. Now, mind you, I am not reading this as someone who is averse to Bernie Sanders getting the nomination. And I'm going to address some of these things because I think that it's fair to talk about the allegations that are made here. It goes on. I'm going to just read a little bit more. Sanders did admit that the harsh reality of his plans is that they would be paid for basically by taxes on the middle class. I think aspects of this are being taken out of context.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's some selective interpretation going mm-hmm. on here. I'm not a Bernie fan, but fair is fair.
Mm-hmm.
Bernie's argument, even though he doesn't provide numbers, is that even if the middle class gets an extra gets increased taxes, what they will save in things like insurance copays, insurance premiums, that at the end of the day, they'll save money.
Right.
And of course, other people at the higher end of the income level will also be taxed at presumably a progressively higher level.
Yes.
Now, I was having sort of a discussion with someone on Facebook, and this is how I framed increased taxes for healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit like infrastructure improvement.
Okay.
You pay highway taxes when you buy gas.
Right.
And eventually they'll use those highway taxes, say, to build a bridge.
Sure.
And once they build that bridge, those taxes you've been paying may save you 20 miles each way going,
right,
say, to work.
Right, right.
So you have paid increased taxes.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, you will be paying less overall.
Right.
And that is a very, very important consideration. There's a difference between borrowing money or raising money in advance for infrastructure,
yeah,
which is supposed to be planned in a way that ends up being essentially profitable to the community,
yeah,
you know, saving gas, saving time, saving money, yeah, increasing commerce, all, yeah, of these things. There's a difference between that and simply borrowing money for ongoing expenses. Coming from New York City, in the 1970s, New York City came close to getting bankrupt. And one of the stories that was being discussed was that you, and I can also say this from personal experience post-divorce, that when you are borrowing money to pay for ongoing regular expenses,
right,
that's the road to bankruptcy.
Hmm.
If you're borrowing money to pay for infrastructure that will in some way pay for itself. So, for example, I've been struggling with a computer that is no longer up to my needs. It's just really, really slow.
Yep.
And I always come away after 4 or 5 or 6 hours feeling like I got nothing accomplished. And that's because of all the time I'm waiting for the computer to do its stuff.
Mm.
And it's like, do I want to pay $1,700 for a new computer, or do I want to pay $900 or $1,000 for the components to put in a box to rebuild my computer?
Right.
I don't really much want to, but it is getting really tiresome.
Mm.
If I had something with more memory and more computer power, you know, like an i9 Intel or something, I have an old i7, and it has 32 gigs of memory, I could get 64, it would be more to my needs.
Yeah.
But it's going to cost, even if I build it myself, close to $1,000.
Sure.
Plus all the labor of transferring drives and stuff like this. It's a hassle.
Yeah. It's a process.
It's a process. And yet, it would probably save me 2 hours a day on average.
Yeah.
That's not chump change time.
Yeah. But people do have a tendency to look at their immediate future and their present more than their far-off future.
Well, the old saying that people don't eat in the long term.
Yeah.
People eat every day.
Yeah.
So you certainly can't tax people into poverty. And really, that's the point of progressive taxation.
Yeah.
That's why, according to Mitt Romney, 40% of Americans don't pay taxes, which is wrong. What they don't pay is income taxes.
Yeah.
Because they don't make enough money to pay income taxes.
Yeah.
So the 60% that do pay enough, make enough to pay income taxes, some of them pay a tiny percentage. Some of them pay, I think the top rate now is 35-ish percent.
Yeah.
During Eisenhower, it was 90 over a certain income level.
Yeah.
You know, we have to talk, and here, I'm getting off track. So what else is new?
Yeah.
By the way, just so you know, open forum, 713-526-5738. This is KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM. I'm Mike Koenig. Andrew Ferguson is my now official co-host.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things to remember about
progressive taxation?
Yeah, progressive taxation is it is not, you see, I need you, man.
Yeah,
the memory, you know, it's like memory's first thing to go, second thing to go, I don't know.
Mm.
The thing about progressive taxation is there are people that are under the impression that over a certain income level, like if you make $50,000, you're at one tax rate, but if you make $50,001, all of a sudden they think their entire income goes up a whole bracket. That is not true.
Exactly. That's not how it works.
And even my sister, who I have to tell you, I mean, she's a very bright woman.
Yeah.
Very bright. Very well-read. Very knowledgeable.
No doubt going to love you mentioning her on your show.
Well, but I'm mentioning her positively.
Okay.
But basically, she was under the impression that because of a certain income bump she had one year, you know, withdrawing IRA money.
Right.
That she would end up with her entire income suddenly going into another bracket. And I had to explain to her, no. It's like the first, and I'm grabbing numbers out of thin air, like the first $20,000, you're not taxed.
Right, something like that, yeah.
And then the $20,001st dollar, that
yes.
$1
is taxed at a higher rate.
That will be, well, because
oh, yes,
there's
yeah,
nothing, and then,
yeah.
you know, then so that'll be taxed at 15%. So your yeah. average tax rate may actually end up being like 1%.
Yeah.
And then at a certain point, like $50,000, something like that, it
yeah.
goes up to 15% on the $50,001st dollar.
Yeah.
So it's why they call them nominal tax rates.
Right.
And when they talk about a 75% tax rate, say, on people making over $50 million a year, even then, they're not talking about 75% of that entire $50 million income.
Yeah.
They're talking about the next dollar
yeah.
over 50. So $50 million will be taxed at 35% or whatever the rate is.
Yeah.
And that $1, if mm-hmm. they make more than, you know, $50 million and $1,
yeah.
that $1 may be taxed at 50%.
Yeah.
So that's how tax rates work, and it's a common misconception. I think we have phone calls, but I don't see any names up.
Yeah, we've got phone calls.
Okay, do you want to just put one on and I'll get the name?
Yeah.
Roger. Roger, you on?
Hello?
Hey, Roger.
Hey, how are you?
I'm okay, thank you. How are you? What's up? What do you want to talk about?
Hey, I just wanted to mention that Bernie Sanders rally
yep.
had no Democratic people there from the no candidates, no nobody from the party, no nothing.
Well, it was a Bernie Sanders rally. It wasn't like a joint
and,
press conference.
Yeah, but it was no Democratic anybody from political candidates or anybody.
It was a Bernie. It was a Bernie Sanders rally. Nobody else was invited.
Hang on. Are you saying that Bernie Sanders himself wasn't there?
No, he's saying no other candidates were there with Bernie. No other Democratic, I guess, officials
right, okay.
were there
so,
with Bernie.
So I guess you're
local Democratic party officials or anybody
right,
that
okay.
showed up for the other rallies that they've had in Houston.
So? I mean, I have to give you a resounding so.
Yeah, I'm just saying it's the party itself or the establishment, so to speak, is not supporting Bernie and did not show up. And I just thought that was odd.
No, why is it odd? He's not a Democrat. He's an independent. He makes it plain he's an independent. He's never joined the Democrats except in name only. He doesn't like the Democratic Party. He's made that plain for decades. He doesn't like the Democratic leadership. He's made that plain for decades. I mean, why would it, I mean, you know, if he gets a majority of the delegates, he'll get the nomination and the chips will fall where they may. But why should the Democratic institution, why should the Democratic Party support him when he's against them? They'll nominate him, but why should they endorse him?
You're just turning over the vote for the Trump administration.
No.
You're, for the most part, you did.
No, I mean, that's a decision for the voters. I think about 12% of voters that favored Bernie when he wasn't nominated. Statistically now, they've done a study, about 12% voted for Trump, which to me is crazy, but there are certain psychological logics behind it. But just because a candidate is running and just because the party doesn't want to endorse a particular person in a primary, that doesn't mean that the party has to show support for everybody.
It's not just showing support. It's just actually even being there to hear what he has to say and also talking to people that attended the rally that you're running for office.
I think you're making a mountain out of a molehill because you're determined to have a grudge.
I don't have a grudge.
Well, you does it Does it sound, Andrew, like he has something of a grudge? Second opinion.
I think he.
I can go both ways. No, I mean, I don't support or not support.
Now, Roger, I think it sounds to me like you're maybe disappointed in the Houston Democratic Party for
National. Oh, well, I guess
he mentioned Houston,
okay.
I believe.
Yeah.
It sounds to me like you're disappointed and maybe a bit upset at the Houston Democratic Party for not, for not sending people to Bernie Sanders rallies as they have done with other candidates. And,
exactly.
And I honestly think that's a fair position to take. It doesn't sound like a grudge, but it does sound like he's upset.
Well, I think.
I'm not upset at all.
Well, I think that you're either upset or you have a grudge. Okay, Roger.
I don't have a grudge. I can honestly tell you that.
Okay. All right. I appreciate you calling, Roger. I disagree with you, but there you go. That's what the show is about. Thank you very much, Roger, for calling. Who's up next? Arnold, you are on the air, I believe?
Yeah. How you doing?
Okay. How are you doing? What's going on?
I was at the rally yesterday, and there was a former DNC chair. I don't know if he was, I think he was a vice president guy here in a local DNC, former guy. He was I want to say he was a Muslim guy. I don't really quite remember his name.
I don't recall an official in the local party by that name, but I only know the very, very top people.
Yeah. But like I said, I mean, he was here in the local DNC, the Houston area.
Okay.
And like I said, I don't recall his name, but he was, I believe they said he was a former VP. And then also there were people there that were going to be running against, our current elected officials.
Okay, so incumbents?
So you're saying there were some down-ballot candidates that were attending the rally that are running on the Democratic side?
That's correct. Okay. And, I mean, if we vote those people this primary instead of, I guess, one of them is running up against Sheila Jackson Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if they ride Bernie's
coattails.
Right, coattails, then they would be our representatives instead of who we currently have.
Well, the whole. So, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'll go ahead and take this. I'll listen up there.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Thanks for calling. Okay, so I think that as far as Roger's comment that no one from the Democratic Party was there in an official sense,
right.
That
may be the case.
May be very well the case.
Yeah.
But there were down-ballot candidates that were willing to associate themselves, that are on the Democratic primary ticket, that were willing to associate themselves with Bernie and did appear. And that is perfectly appropriate.
Yeah. I mean, I think what Roger was kind of trying to get at was that if he's, because I'm not totally familiar with the situation, not being a Democrat myself.
And not having followed the rally.
Yeah, and not having followed the rally. But if other candidate rallies in the Houston area had been attended by Houston Democrats in official capacities.
Like the chair
and that sort of thing. And then Bernie Sanders' rally wasn't attended.
That would be a tantamount endorsement of one candidate over another candidate.
Yeah.
Which, as a general rule, parties don't do. Although the Texas party, I think, has endorsed one of the senatorial candidates.
Yeah.
Which I have mentioned on the air is a very unusual thing.
Yeah. And so, you know, and especially looking at it with that quasi-endorsement or direct endorsement, if it was.
It was a direct endorsement.
Looking at it with that direct endorsement, you know, it would seem that the state Democratic Party is not, is taking perhaps a different tactic to other state Democratic parties in regards to whether they want to endorse candidates in the primary.
Well, there
may be a rare thing, but.
There are half a dozen candidates running. I think they would like to avoid a runoff, which is almost inevitably going to be the case. And I think from the party point of view, the institutional point of view, which I may or may not agree with, I want to say this, and it's something I should say at the top of every show. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily express the opinions of KPFT or the Pacifica Network.
Right. Our opinions are our own and nobody else's.
So, that being said, I think that for whatever reason, the Texas Party is a little spooked by how many candidates are running and how many candidates among them they consider to be qualified or counter to party principles that may get into the runoff, kind of like, you know, my poster boy, Paul LePage, who never got even who got about the same electoral support as Adolf Hitler because of the way the election split. And instead of a runoff, he got a plurality win with like 38% for 2 4-year terms.
Right.
Horrible, horrible human being. But that is the risk when you have half a dozen candidates running.
Yeah.
And I think that the party, rightly or wrongly, probably is hoping to put their thumb on the scale enough to either avoid that possibility or to at least get one candidate they like with enough votes to win in a runoff.
Yeah, and to either kind of thin the herd out a little bit or to make it so that they don't have to.
Now, in spite of what a lot of Bernie supporters think in terms of thumbs on the scale, at least in terms of public statements, they have not, I don't think they have publicly tried to work against Bernie. Now, there are like arcane rules and stuff, and there has been talk from some Democrats they want to change the convention rules to try to work against Bernie, but so far that's just talk. And there's always a minority of people who are thinking of doing things. But as far as I have read, the party leadership has no interest in changing any rules prior to the convention.
Right. There's certainly no public statements of support for a candidate or the opposite of support against another candidate.
They have not endorsed the National Party has not endorsed any of the presidential candidates, nor have they said don't vote for a particular presidential candidate.
Right. Now,
which is the appropriate thing in a primary.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, Roger's, you know,
But just like me, they may have their opinions.
Yeah, Roger's point is perhaps that, you know, even if they're not publicly making any moves to try and, you know, win the primary for somebody or, you know, make it harder for another person to win, there is the possibility that individual members' opinions could influence their actions in an official capacity.
Well, if...
Which is always possible no matter who we're talking about.
And I actually think from Rogers... I mean, I don't want to put words in his mouth.
No, of course not.
But my sense is that... And I'm sorry, Roger, but this is my opinion. It sounded to me like he was looking for reasons to be angry at the Democratic Party vis-a-vis Bernie. And while there may be indications that the Democratic Party as an institution would not be thrilled with Bernie as a nominee, and I think any objective person can totally understand why, I think, on the other hand, that there is a general consensus that whoever gets the nomination should and for the most part will get the support of the party hierarchy, the party rank and file, and Democratic voters. I would not, well, okay, I shouldn't say, I'm going to say this because it's my opinion, not KPFT.
Yeah,
or I would not be, Bernie would not be my favorite presidential nominee. But, you know, I have my other favorites. Now, I will say this. I have discussed, I'm not going to say I was the first. I don't know that I was. But I have discussed, and other people have discussed, that given the number of candidates going this deeply into the primary season, there is a rising possibility of a brokered convention where nobody will get a majority on the first ballot.
Right.
By the way, let me just interrupt here for a second, do an ID. You're listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT Houston 90.1 FM. I'm Mike Koenig. Andrew Ferguson is my co-host. And you can support KPFT by going to kpft.org and clicking on the donate jar and hopefully picking this show. But the idea is to support KPFT. You can also text 713-526-5738 with the word give.
G-I-V-E.
G-I-V-E. And then there's like an automated process so you don't have to mess around with people.
Yep.
You know, if you're a little...
If you'd rather not.
If you'd rather not.
For whatever reason.
For whatever reason. Also, my website is thinkwingradio.com. I'm also on Twitter, at Thinkwing Radio. I'm also on Facebook, Thinkwing Radio with Mike Koenig. Not that original.
I don't have any good websites, or I've got a Twitter, but I hate it.
Well, I do have to remember now to put you on my blog post as my co-host. I have to.
Which, yeah.
Yeah, I just have to remember to do that. It's a new thing.
It's a transition period.
It's a transition
period. I get
period.
It. But in speaking of, if we can go back.
Yeah, and actually we have a couple of calls, so we should probably go ahead.
Okay. But in speaking of the likelihood of a brokered convention, 538, which, you know, they have their problems. I'm not saying that they're a perfect source, but what is?
They predicted Trump.
That's true. The 538's current predictive model for who's going to win the 2020 Democratic primary, Sanders' odds, according to 538, are 1 in 2. That's 46%.
Mm-hmm.
No one is 2 in 5, or 41%. So, according to 538, at least, I mean, a brokered convention is a very real possibility still.
It is, and I think they said it would be the first one since, like, 64.
Something like that. It definitely
doesn't happen often.
Yeah, very often. So.
And, you know, if you get into a situation like that on the second ballot, none of the... And I need to get to the phone calls. Give me 1 second. None of the delegates will be bound for any candidate on the second ballot. And that's when the horse trading starts. Now, if Bernie comes to the convention with 45% of the delegates, that means he doesn't have 55%.
That's true.
So it's entirely possible that all the other candidates with their delegates could come together and choose somebody.
Yeah.
And that somebody would theoretically have 55% of the delegates and therefore the voters by proxy.
That's if they can agree to all get behind
somebody. Well, ultimately, they have to. I actually think in the first Republican, maybe the second Republican convention, but the one that nominated Lincoln in 1860, if I recall, they went through like 16 ballots before they got to Lincoln. I mean, there was a lot of horse trading and a lot of backslapping and ear whispering and deal making. 16 ballots, man.
Yeah.
And, you know, these kinds of things are possible. I don't think it would go that far for a Democratic convention just because I think that the party and the delegates would feel that going that far into a brokered convention would destroy any legitimacy that the candidate would have against Trump.
Yeah.
May or may not win,
but
would itself be a kneecapping.
Yeah, it would be difficult,
so
certainly.
So I would be surprised if it would go past a third ballot. Mm. And maybe even a second.
Right.
Okay, let's go to our next caller. And who is that? M.O.D. Oh, this should be interesting. How you doing, M.O.D.? What's on your mind today?
Well, I think y'all spent a lot of cycles talking about Bernie when there's other candidates, like, you know, Buttigieg or Bloomberg, right?
Are you objecting to the fact that our conversation has been about Bernie and not about others? Is that kind of what you're saying, or something else?
My observation is that the others aren't mentioned.
Right, okay.
I would be happy to mention the others, but now...
Can I give you my understanding?
Yeah, prompt
sure.
us.
Give us the Reader's Digest version, but go ahead.
I went and looked up Buttigieg.
Mm-hmm.
Buttigieg.
He's a Rhodes Scholar.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And his primary funding comes from the Pritzker family. They're called the Hyatt heirs.
Okay. The Hyatt Hotels.
Heirs to the Hyatt Hotel chain.
Yeah.
Now, I looked at the Pritzkers, and, man, they're interesting. You know how they start their wealth, Mike? During the internment incarceration of the Japanese on the West Coast, they came in and took up all of the housing of tens of thousands of Japanese homes. In California.
That's interesting.
That's what started their fortune, along with the Hyatt brand.
Yeah, but by that rationale, we should just put them out of business because they did a horrible thing.
Well, let's look at some more in here.
Wait a second. I want to draw a comparison here. You've got Bayer, which used slave labor during the Second World War and also paid reparations in the form of things like aspirin to the Allies after the First World War.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they Bayer made poison gas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so, I mean.
Yeah. A herbicide called Monsanto. But what I want to do, Mike, is get this across before you cut me off. And that would be their funding. And I'm not going to say it's good or bad, Mike.
Okay.
I'm just going to give you simple facts that have been verified.
Okay.
$800 million went to Obama's both election campaigns from this dynasty, this family.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. The funding of Chicago University for the transgender studies, lobbying for transgender studies that helped crafted the bill for the gays in the military. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just finding out where the money goes, okay? And a lot of their funding goes the largest funding for transgender lobbying in the Chicago University went to ROTC too. $25 million in donations
for
getting their officers promoted
from
within.
From okay, where? From where, also, MOD?
They also acquired Target.
I'm sorry. Who? From who?
Where was the source for,
is
of that
all
funding?
Of this Pritzker?
Pritzkers are the Pritzker, okay. Is the family that is the major heir to the Hyatt hotel chain.
Okay.
And they have donated all these millions and millions of dollars to Chicago University to start the studies and lobbying of military acceptance of gay. I'm not saying it's good or bad, guys. Please let
sure.
me finish.
Okay. Well, what I'm going to ask you is, I really don't want to go down. I get the drift of what you're saying, but I don't want to go down their entire list of contributions.
Okay.
So what I'm going
to
ask you. I would rather you not, just because
they acquired, Mike, listen. They acquired
no,
Target.
MOD, you listen. I get the idea. I think our listeners get the idea. We have to move along. Hold on. What I'm going to ask you to do, I'm going to ask you two questions. What are you inferring from this information? And what are you implying to me as your assessment of this information?
If that's your goal.
Those two questions, and you've got a minute or two to try to digest that down, and then I'm going to have to move along to the next caller.
So the first billionaire transgender person is Jennifer Pritzker.
Did you hear my questions?
Okay, now let's go over to Buttigieg.
Did you hear
Buttigieg,
my questions?
Buttigieg.
All right, I'm going to have to let you go, MOD. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you don't see.
You're not answering my questions. I can't go down their entire contribution list. I asked you two questions, and I need you to answer them, and then I can let you go, unless you don't want to answer them, in which case I can let you go. Which way are we going?
I think we dropped him.
Oh, okay. Well. All right, just let me say on the air,
because
now he can hear me because he's not talking over me. All of this, I'm not even questioning MOD's facts necessarily.
Yeah.
What I wanted to know, because we can't go down a whole list of contributions going back to Obama or Bush or Clinton.
Yeah.
We can't do that. So what I wanted to know was, given the sense of where he was going, mm-hmm. what was he inferring this meant?
Yeah.
And what was he implying to me the conclusion that he was drawing?
Yeah.
And he just wasn't doing that.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, something that... Not just him, but we've got some callers over the, you know, 6 months or so that I've been with this show that, you know, don't really seem to understand that we have a time limit.
Yes.
And we need to, you know, when you, it's fine to come on the air and not have a full idea of what it is exactly you want to say.
Sure.
But, you know, having some crucial information you want to get out and making sure that that's maybe one or two points at maximum.
Yes.
And then saying, you know, either asking us what we think about this or telling us what you think about what you've just said concisely and then asking us to respond.
And I understand, especially for people that don't call often,
yes.
that calling a radio show, you know, there's a little fumfering and a little, hi, how are you? Well, here's what I'm calling.
Exactly.
I get that.
Yeah.
But I actually have a rough rule, which is a little tougher because my screen isn't working, so I can't time things as well. But my rule is that when I take a caller, mm-hmm. as long as they, you know, don't break FCC rules on me, I try to give them 1 to 2 minutes, mm-hmm. which doesn't sound like much until you're on the radio.
Yeah.
I try to give them 1 to 2 minutes to speak their piece. Mm-hmm. And this is a good thing for people listening to know. I actually do have kind of a rough rule for this.
Sure.
I give them 1 to 2 minutes to speak their piece with little or no interruption from me, which is teeth gritting. And then after that, I can continue a call mm-hmm. for up to about 5 minutes if I feel that the material is interesting, either in terms of how the caller is presenting it or in terms of the material or information that it brings up for me that I can then share or the content of the discussion. Occasionally, I'll go over 5 minutes if I feel the conversation is worth it. But these are my rules, my rough rules. 1 to 2 minutes to speak your piece, up to 5 minutes to have a discussion. If the discussion is interesting, everything is at my discretion. I have the right to deny service.
Unfortunately, our show is kind of an elevator pitch, a series of elevator pitches from people we don't know. And if you want to have more than just an elevator pitch to make your piece, well, maybe write into the station and ask them to make this a two-hour show.
Yeah. Hey. But I think, though, that we would still have to limit calls to about 5 minutes because we do have listeners. The vast majority of people who listen do not call.
Yeah. Well, maybe we could make it a little bit longer of an elevator pitch. I don't know. But.
You know what? When you have 1 or 2 minutes, you basically want to have 100 words or less.
Yeah. Yeah. So
roughly.
Anyway.
Anyway.
If we've got to let you go, it's unfortunate, but we've got to let you go.
It's
if
nothing personal.
If we've got to move on and start responding, we've got to move on and start responding, and please let us do that. Otherwise, the show will go nowhere.
Okay, so to make the show go somewhere, let me do a station ID. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM. My co-host is Andrew Ferguson. He's a very helpful young man. I appreciate having him.
Thank you.
You can contact KPFT at kpft.org. You can find schedules and archive programs and podcasts and places where you can send money. There's a little donate link, hint, hint. You can also call 713-526-5738 to talk on the show and text that same number with the word give, and you can also donate that way.
Yep.
ThinkWingRadio.com, at ThinkWingRadio Twitter, ThinkWingRadio Facebook, and who is our next caller? Marlon. Okay, Marlon, you're on. Thank you for calling. What's up?
How's it going, Mike?
It's okay. What do you got to talk?
All right. So I just wanted to get your opinions on what you thought about the MSNBC and certain media, liberal media outlet, the meltdown they had this weekend over Bernie winning Nevada.
I
got my own thoughts on that, but I'll let you expatiate on it. Just see where you fall on that spectrum.
Well, just
and secondly, my second question. I'm not going to take too much time. Second question was, we already have socialist programs in this country.
We're a mixed economy.
From Medicare to you know, free high school for you know. Everybody who wants to go in there, except you want to go the private route.
Right.
And what do you think, people who don't understand this concept that, I mean, the VA is complete socialized medicine, Medicare is complete socialized medicine. These programs we hold in esteem in this country.
Yes.
If that were to be pulled back and we said, okay, fine, you know, it's free market for all, there'll be a huge uproar in this country if those programs were retired all of a sudden. But let me get your response.
Okay, let me just ask you a quick question. The meltdown on MSNBC, I'm thinking of a specific person that I've read about. Do you just want to give me the name so I know we're on the same page?
That would be Chris Matthews.
Oh, Chris Matthews. That wasn't even the one I was thinking about.
Who basically admitted she didn't know what the voting population was thinking anymore in this country.
I'm sorry, who's the second person?
Nicole Wallace.
Okay. I appreciate your call. Let me respond. I don't know about Nicole Wallace.
Mm-hmm.
I did read the quote from Chris Matthews. Chris Matthews is also the guy that on election night in 2016, when they were projecting Trump as the winner, said there has to be a unicorn in this S pile.
Mm.
He said that live on the air. So, no. I mean, Chris Matthews, he hasn't necessarily gotten improved with age.
Mm.
I mean, he's an acquired taste as it is. He's a very smart, experienced guy. But he said something about Bernie. I wish I could remember the exact quote. I don't have it here. But it was something about Bernie and his victory would be something akin. He somehow made some kind of a correlation to Nazis.
Oh, yes. Yeah, something like that. I remember seeing that on social media. I didn't actually see, you know, I don't watch MSNBC all that much, but it was not taken very well by a lot of people.
It was not taken well, but...
He was saying that the media would be killed. Okay.
Well, the media, Bernie doesn't have a good relation with the media, which is concerning because it looks a lot like the bad relationship that Trump has with the media.
Well, I don't know if I'd say it's a bad relationship with the media. You know, granted, I haven't, you know, I'm not a religious TV viewer, you know, so I don't watch 24-hour news cycles, you know, but it seems to me like there's a lot of, interviews he's given where interviewers have asked sort of personality questions, which is not uncommon.
Right.
But Bernie hasn't really wanted to talk about
he's
that. He's
prickly,
wanted to talk about his policies.
And he can be non-responsive.
That's true, but usually it's because he wants to get
okay,
to the things that
we've got about 7 minutes, and we want to get through three
right.
callers.
Yes.
So let's get to the next caller.
That's what that meant.
Cynthia, you're on the air.
Hi.
I'm going to let you talk for a minute so you feel like you got your piece. Go ahead.
All right. Well, my piece is... I was a Bernie delegate last time, and immediately after the election in 2016, we formed a group called Our Revolution, which isn't directly with Bernie, but it's like a GLPC, you know, it's a caucus.
Yes.
And they endorse people. So it's not the Democratic Party.
Are you talking?
Which I'm part of.
Are you talking about thecaucus.org?
Because y'all were talking about how did they endorse people?
Thecaucus.org.
So it's a caucus that's underneath Bernie, not completely. Bernie doesn't put his finger, and it's really kind of rigorous. So you can seek their endorsement or not seek their endorsement. And so, evidently, these couple of people that were there had sought their endorsement of the Our Revolution is what the name is.
So what is your point?
And they were, well, because somebody said they thought it might be the Democratic Party or it might be Bernie or, I was just explaining it.
Okay, Andrew
That's
has something to say.
I think there's
kind of a misunderstanding of what's been said here. I think this is going back to, who was our first caller again? Is
Roger.
Roger. I think this is going back to Roger's point.
I write them down.
Yes, you do. You're referencing his call where he was talking about how members of the state Democratic Party, that's who he was talking about, members of the Texas Democratic Party were not at Bernie's rally. And so this suggests that...
I'm not surprised at that because they're... not really supposed to, and they don't endorse.
Exactly.
That's,
they don't endorse people.
We agree.
That's
there
what
are
we were.
Other caucuses that do endorse.
That's
other candidates.
Thank you. Thank
okay.
you for calling.
All right, Cynthia.
All right.
I thank
that's
you so much.
That's what we were talking about. Was that we were talking about the state party does not endorse people. No other, you know, caucus endorsements or anything like that. But you know, thank you for the information.
Okay, next caller is Mike. You're on the air, Mike.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, how are you?
Oh, could be worse, man. It could be 90 degrees out there, and I wouldn't be able to breathe.
You know, there was a Mad Magazine thing once that said that you know you're a bore when someone asks you how you are and you tell them.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on. What's on your mind?
And that gets to one of my little pet peeves is quit asking people how they are if you really don't want to know.
Hmm. It's a social.
Say, how's it going?
Yeah,
or
it's
whatever,
a. It's
but,
a. No,
know,
it's.
If you don't want to know how I am, don't ask me.
It's a social lubricant, and
know,
there is an assumed appropriate answer.
There are a lot of better ones out there.
I think that's a fair
Listen,
stance to take.
Yeah,
I called in because I called in at the end of the last show too, and I'm basically going to be making the same point is how foolish we look and how silly we look and how ridiculously we are cooperating with Vladimir Putin's vision of dividing America. That's his entire purpose on this planet, in his mind, is he wants to destroy America.
Yep.
And the best way he can do that is get people like Trump in office and people like Bernie Sanders to run against him to push the farthest corners of our political context to the farthest
fragmentation of consensus
as they can. And to do everything he can to keep anybody from a moderate standpoint from getting nominated.
I agree, and if it's okay with you, I'd like to move on to my next caller, probably
ahead.
My last call. Thank you so much, Mike, for calling. And who's next?
And I disagree, just to be clear.
Expound? Okay. I thought we had a caller on the line.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
In case, for those who can't hear our board operators whispering in our ear.
Yeah, we have
he just said,
side conversation.
He just said, our callers just got go.
Put that out
oh,
there.
Oh, well, sorry.
But be that as it may, I mean, obviously, this show has focused a lot around Bernie. Mm. And I understand at least one of the callers said, well, why aren't you talking about Warren? Why aren't you talking about Steyer?
Yeah.
Why aren't you talking about Klobuchar? And I guess it's just because today the news, the analysis, the pros, the cons, the concerns, the endorsements, I mean, Bernie is the guy in the news. He's not even my favorite guy, but there it is.
Yeah. We talk about the news, and he's in the news.
Yeah, and I mean, I've made it clear. I do not consider myself a journalist.
Hmm.
I consider myself partly newsreader.
Right.
Partly analyst.
Right.
That analysis that I do extends from choosing what it is I'm going to talk about, choosing the excerpts that I'm going to be referring to during the show, all of which I post on my blog, thinkwingradio.com, by the way, so you can check everything.
Mm.
And it's partly analysis of the meta situation and how I feel about it.
Mm.
And you don't have to agree with my analysis.
Mm.
It's my ideas, and the whole point of the talk show is you call and you challenge me, but I challenge you back.
Yeah.
You know, it's a two-way street.
Yeah.
So I appreciate all the callers.
Mm.
I'm going to just do this one more thing. We have a couple of minutes.
We've got 3 minutes, about.
Yeah, okay. Scott, let's get you on because you matter.
Yes.
How you doing, Scott?
Fine, thank you.
Okay, you've got about a minute and a half.
No, why not limit tax increases mainly to the very rich and use this as a limit on what on promises, campaign promises, you know?
I don't think you can put a legal limit on campaign promises.
Well, candidates could say, well, if there's money for it, you know, Bernie Sanders offers the full package. I voted for Elizabeth Warren, who doesn't quite do that.
Well, Elizabeth Warren, I think, has the advantage of actually, after having Fumford for a while, actually put forward a plan. The plan included a taxation idea. It included the limitations to the transition period. So, I think the difference between Bernie and Warren, first of all, I think Bernie is a one-trick pony. I hear him talking about the same stuff all the time, forever. And people say, well, but he's never changed his mind. And that may be good. That may be bad. But he doesn't talk about a broad range of topics. And this country is dealing with a broad range of topics.
Yeah.
I think other candidates are doing a better job at that. So I got to let you go. We're running out of time. But I appreciate your call, Scott. I'm glad we had some time to talk. Okay, you've been listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, with my co-host. I have to get used to that.
You have
my
to.
Co-host, my co-host, Andrew Ferguson. I appreciate all the callers. I'll be back next week. Remember, the opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily endorsed by KPFT or the Pacifica Network. It's just ours and the callers, so just blame us. Have a great week. Look forward to seeing you again. Remember to vote. Take care.
See you later, folks.
Where freedom rings and singers sing. Where Robert Earl Keane meets Martin Luther King. From jazz, justice, peace and rap. R&B, sports, blues and comedy. From heavy metal standing hand in hand with our chants. We shall not be silenced by fearmongers and sycophants. The place where your neighbor is on your airwaves. A true community. Celebrating diversity in thought, music, and love, where your stories are told in unison. The most loving words that we can say, and we say it so bold. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston. Welcome home. February is American Heart Month. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, heart disease is a leading cause of death for men and women in the United States. High blood pressure, high cholesterol, smoking, diabetes, obesity, and lack of exercise can increase your risk of developing heart disease. Your age, gender, and family history of heart disease also play a role. Coronary artery disease, or CAD, is the most common form of heart disease and a major cause of heart attack. CAD occurs when plaque builds up along the walls of the heart's arteries, causing them to narrow and limit blood flow. Your doctor can screen you for heart disease using calcium scoring with cardiac CT, which can identify the presence, location, and extent of plaque buildup. Talk to your doctor about whether you're at risk for coronary artery disease and find out if cardiac screening is right for you. For more information,